We got married on Halloween because we we were really concerned about the election, and we they had just like pushed through Amy Coney Barrett, and that was like a really bad warning sign when it comes to marriage equality. And we were really concerned about it. So we went ahead and pulled the trigger, so to speak, because we just needed to make sure that we were protected, especially under the pressure of COVID. Like, I think if COVID hadn't been a thing, we may not have been as pressured, but like, as a protection, like just in case either of us got it, like we wanted to have that next of kin stuff taken care of, and like making sure that like we were protected to be able to like go see each other in the hospital or whatever, you know what I mean? Just trying to make sure that all of our ducks are in a row, was really like the main reason why we decided to just kind of do it really quick.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast. Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn, plan that wedding. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews. Hello, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Happy to have you.
It's June 2021, Pride Month. This is one of the months in the year that we have an extra episode because there are 5 Wednesdays in June, whereas normally we've got 4. And so we like that because we get to put out extra. And, you know, we have been busy little bees over here.
Yeah, no wonder I'm so tired. And that's 5 episodes.
5 episodes in a month. And we have been recording like crazy, everybody. We have been recording. We have a lot of recordings in the what we call the bank, the vault. Do we call it the vault? I always call it the bank, and I think you say the vault.
Do I?
I don't know. Maybe, do you say the bank?
We have them on the back burner more than usual.
We've got them in Dropbox is where they really are living.
That being said, I recorded this episode quite a long time ago.
Yes.
And was in contact with the two people, the couple that I'm interviewing in the episode prior to that for several months. So it feels like a long time coming, and I'm excited to release it, and I'm happy we were able to work it into Pride Month.
Right. I think it's just fitting. It's just lovely. It's wonderful. And I'm sorry I wasn't on this one, that I missed it, because you and I talked right after you recorded this, and you're like, this was such a good episode. I really liked it. And you told me all about it. So Christy, tell us a little bit more. What the hell are you talking about here with this?
I did really like it, and I was really fired up afterwards. So the episode, and whether we put this in the title or not, the place you should go to look right now if you're listening and want to look at who we're talking to is Queerly Weds. That is actually a blog on Kirsten's website. So hellokirsten.com, and then Queerly Weds is a blog. And then she also has a Instagram account, same name, Queerly Weds, all one word. And it started as a quarantine project for this couple. They live in LA. And when they started to wedding plan, which was also, you know, in the past year and a half, so everything was crazy, but they encountered their own challenges, and they both identify as queer and non-binary. And we've talked about this before on the podcast, and we've talked about several different disenfranchised groups of humans that have to deal with an added level of what can sometimes be like bullshit or negative with wedding planning, which is already hard or at least new. And, you know, everybody could use a little hand holding. So she started this blog to express all of the issues And I love the blog. So Kirsten reached out to me on Instagram at first. You saw those DMs, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we just went back and forth. And then when I went to Kirsten's blog and could see how she organized it, was like, yep, this is a person that I want to talk
right
to.
Right down our alley.
Because you know we love a good like top 10 or 7 tips or 15 ways. And this blog, Queerly Weds, is just full of these great posts about wedding planning while queer and talking to Kirsten and Margie, talking about their relationship, their challenges. It was really great. And I found myself like, you know, when you talk to someone and you feel like I've just known them forever, like we're in each other's lives, there's a familiarity there.
Yeah.
Well, there's not really, right? I don't know them like personally until we recorded together, but it felt like.
We felt that connection.
Yeah. We felt like we were there. And because of that, I found myself being way more like forthcoming and opinionated about some wedding planning stuff than.
Oh, a little saucy here? Did we get a
like
little.
You know this stuff, you, Michelle, but right. I don't think I've ever said things in as like, just here's the bottom line as I did in this episode, not to make this episode about me by any means, but the conversation fueled in me like a level of honesty and a lack of filter. So I was kind of fired up when I finished recording and I talked to you about it because I was like, oh, there's a little bit of like, oh, this episode is gonna potentially like ruffle some feathers. And I'm like at a point in my life where I'm okay with that.
You know what?
So,
fuck it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything I said was
so
true to
yes.
me. And, you know, Kirsten and Margie are sharing their experiences and they're pretty fired up about them too.
Good.
So this is one of the many reasons why we continue to do this podcast after 250 episodes, because we can still connect with people and tell stories and share experiences that we feel like need to be put out into the world. So it makes me feel like a little humble and honored to have this platform.
Well, that's great. I'm really bummed now that I missed this interview, but I also want to just shout out, I'm looking at Kirsten's website, hellokirsten.com. The artwork, the talent is insane. Like, so cool, by the way, Kirsten, if you're listening. I hope she's listening. I hope she listens to this. So I'm excited to hear this, and I know you all are going to love it too.
Let's jump in.
All right, here we go.
My name is Kirsten. I am a creative living in Los Angeles and also a very passionate dog parent. Blossoming baker, plant connoisseur, all of those good things, and started Queer Wedding Planning blog as a quarantine project. And then I have my wonderful wife, Margie, here. She works in the entertainment industry at a talent agency. She is a foodie and also an aspiring forest hag. She wants to disappear into the forest.
Wow, I've never heard that before.
Yes.
Yes. I just like want to disappear from society and like have like a homestead in the woods and like be off grid. Like I just want to.
Like Hobbit style, like with moss that like
honestly,
covers.
Yes.
The,
like, okay. Aesthetically speaking, yes.
Yeah,
like okay, I want to grow all my own food. Like I just like, especially after this year and COVID and how like society has not handled it very well, I'm just like done with humanity.
Yeah.
And I would love to just be one with nature.
Yeah.
That's my ultimate goal.
Yes. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. At the beginning of the pandemic, everybody was saying, you know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And so there was all these like slogans about like, you know, let's do this one thing. It's going to only last a couple weeks and then everything's going to go back to normal. And with our wedding coming up very shortly, after everything went into lockdown, I was really holding on to like, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to do what we need to do for
just going to postpone a little bit.
Exactly. Okay. We're going to just kind of hold on to what people are saying is going to happen. And then we'll be able to still have our wedding. We were for a I would say maybe 2 or 3 weeks, we were totally still planning on having our wedding on our original date. And then it just, we got closer and closer and closer, and we were like, well, this decision has now been made for us, because, you know, we were within, I think, maybe 2 weeks. I don't even think it was that long.
Okay, when my office locked down, we were 20 days out from our wedding.
So what was the original plan? What did that wedding look like?
It was still pretty small. We had maybe 30 guests or so, 30 to 35 guests, including ourselves. We were planning to have our ceremony outdoors. Our dinner was in a venue that we could open up windows and essentially be outdoors. So we had basically planned a more or less COVID
compliant.
Yeah, exactly. And, but at the time, everything was totally locked down. So obviously we couldn't move forward with those plans. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, the decision was basically just made for us, and I was distraught. I was like very emotional about it. Because we had picked our wedding date because it's my parents' anniversary. And my dad passed away when I was 12, and it was just like another way to kind of incorporate him into the day. So we decided to move the wedding by a whole year to April 11th, 2021. And as we approached April 11th, 2021, we realized that we weren't going to be able to have the wedding that we had planned. As COVID compliant as it was, it wasn't going to be the like intimate setting, being able to like dance and scream, sing, and really enjoy like actually being with our guests and like being very personal with our guests.
Did you get to do anything like that for your Halloween wedding when it ended up being like redo times two?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes, we did. We were able, my best friend who ended up actually marrying us has this lovely courtyard in his apartment complex. And there's like these big long tables down there. And we were able to kind of like set up these literal tins of food from like a local yeah. Cuban restaurant. We're both Cuban American. So it was like really lovely to have like mm-hmm. our food there. And we were able to kind of like sit around and eat with everybody. I mean, it wasn't as like luxurious and beautiful as like our original plan was, but mm-hmm. With the like impending election, that was definitely
impending.
it was because we really didn't know what way it was going to go. And
I know, isn't that crazy? We're talking about October, but we still didn't know what way it was going to go even after it was done.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, yeah. That was wild.
Yeah. It was just like a really scary time. And I think that was, also at a time when we were seeing so much COVID related death. And we were receiving so many messages that marriage equality was going to be back on the table as like something to overturn and like something to get rid of again. That was really scary. And that was like a reckoning moment, honestly, where we had to kind of decide, like, we know we're going to get married. We've been engaged for a long time. We know that we still want to preserve the whole wedding thing, but we need to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
And it very quickly became a no-brainer. I mean, I think mm-hmm. we decided like October 20th. I mean, we literally,
yeah, we planned the whole thing in a week. I mean, we leading up to finally making the decision to go ahead and get married, on Halloween, we were having these like very frank conversations with each other about like, you know, if this is what is going to happen, like if this is just the course of events that life is handing us, then that's okay. Let's make the most of it. Let's still do thing that's going to be incredible and beautiful, and we're going to be surrounded by people that we love to celebrate us. And you know, we have these people that want to throw together a wedding for us in mm-hmm. a week, which was absolutely wild to me. And so we just, yeah, there was the morning wave and then the like sudden relief of like, okay, if this is how it's meant to be, then this is how it's meant to be.
And, right. And yeah. we had decided like we still personally believe that we deserve the wedding that we paid for, planned, like that we poured a lot of ourselves into. It's a massive collaborative effort. And we'll have it later, and it'll be a beautiful fucking party where our friends get to like go away for a weekend. We get to go away for a weekend. We get to do all the beautiful things. But then like the immense pressure of it being the most important day in air quotes is kind of lifted because mm-hmm. we've done the thing that is the point mm-hmm. and we did it when it really mattered.
Right.
Yeah.
And when it really, really counted. And then we can party about it later.
Yeah.
Did you feel like your vows, and tell me about your vows to each other, but it does sound like there's a added meaning to some of those words, even the most traditional words of what two people say when they're committing to each other. Like, did those feel, were you like, whoa, these feel different than I kind of thought they would? Or were you reading them with a different, like, it just feels like it's kind of under the gun in some ways with the actual right being questioned.
Right.
It's bananas that we're even talking about it after everything our country has done and been through.
Right, exactly. So we actually did something really interesting with our vows. I dubbed them popcorn vows. So we wrote our vows together, and basically so Margie said one line, I said one line. She said the next line, I said the next line. And we just went back and forth like that. And I felt like they were really powerful because they basically ended up being like a spell. Like we were like doing
conjuring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like almost like what's the word? Like doing this
like a ritual?
Like a ritual. Yeah. A ritual is a perfect word for it. And it just felt right to be doing that together back and forth, and not me saying my piece and her saying her piece. It felt way more correct to do it together, to back and forth, be telling each other.
And it also it also released us of the pressure of like in 1 week we needed to find a magical amount of time to be able to write these beautiful vows to each other.
You're like, I need to take a day with a journal and sit in a park and like write all these words. And you're like, we don't have it. We don't have that day.
Exactly. We don't have it. So there was like one night where we had a little bit of time and we were like, let's just write them together.
Yeah.
Let's write them together. Let's write brand. Like I had already written my vows for our original April wedding. So I was like, we can steal some things from there if you want. You can't see the rest of it, but like, I'll tell you the things I'm willing to give to this endeavor.
Yeah.
And then we came up with stuff that was our own. So while we were vowing to each other, we were also like making vows to the people who were there to witness, like, this is what we stand for as a couple. Mm-hmm.
And you're creating a family. So it's like your family creed almost.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have them, we kept them, they're on our fridge.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of nice to like every once in a while go back and look at them and be like, yeah, we did that. Like,
yeah.
You know, we just like, made vows as a couple for the things that we are going to stand for and the things that are important to us and how we want to, like the kinds of goods that we want to bring to the world.
Yeah.
I have this like visual and I don't know where it came from. And I feel like I know you both, that I've known you both for a lot longer than I have, but I have like the idea of like two of you holding hands, looking at a mountain and being like, we're going to climb that now. Like, it's very clear. We're going to climb that mountain together and you hold hands and then you make it to the top and you look at each other and it's like, and now we're going to jump. Like, it's the decision to actually do it that was the roller coaster. But once you make that decision, it almost feels like the calm can, like, there's a million shitty reasons why you had to make that decision.
Yeah.
And big things happening in our world. But you held hands and you did it together, like your way. Not, I'll meet you at the top, or like, I'm going to take some time and find myself. And like, it's just so, it's lovely. I know it wasn't the wedding you thought you were going to have. And I haven't even seen that many pictures and like, you know, don't know that much about it in terms of details, but the choice to leap like together that way seems like the most important element.
Definitely. Yeah,
for sure. It definitely had like like, oh, this is an adult decision that we're making. Yeah. You know what I mean? It definitely had like gravity to it, but it was, for me, once it like dawned on me, like, we need to do this and we need to do this now, it was an absolute no brainer. Like,
yeah,
it was totally, it felt like the exact right thing to do. Yeah. To, you have to do shit that protects you. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. We live in a world that doesn't really give a shit about queer people. We live in a world that a lot doesn't want queer people to exist, that doesn't want to see queer people thrive. And we are slowly chipping away at the world and slowly chipping away at the systems. We had to, I feel like we had a responsibility to do it, to be honest. Like, we had a responsibility to set a certain example. I mean, and Kirsten and I talk about this a lot too. Like, if marriage equality wasn't in the position that it's in, I really wouldn't feel pressured to get married. I don't really think that marriage is necessary.
Yeah, it's not your relationship that is in question. Like, we need to get this down so neither one of us bolts. Like, you've been together a long time. Like, you have your own rules. You know what you're doing.
And we live in a society where your unit is only respected if you're actually married. So like, if we weren't married, we wouldn't be able to, you know, God forbid one of us got sick and ended up in the hospital. Like, I wouldn't be able to go and stay with her.
Like, it's not guaranteed.
Right. Or, you know, I don't know. There's like a million examples like that where like your relationship isn't respected.
Yeah, it's not legit.
Exactly. Which is crazy.
Not just if you're not married, but also in many ways, if you're not conforming to what idea we have of, you know, two functioning adults should look like. My friend said, marriage means family. Like, even to say like, this is my husband or this is my wife, for them, they felt like they were received in a different way from other people. She even gave the example of like a waitress at a restaurant. What does that waitress mean to you? It doesn't matter what she thinks of your relationship, but it was like, I'm not being questioned everywhere. Like, well, who is this? Well, what's he to you? What are you guys, married? What are you, gay? Are you straight? People, you know, they didn't have to like explain as much, or they felt like they didn't, just by having the protection, like a little orb around them to be like, we're married, everyone, calm down. We're married. We're just like you, you know?
Exactly.
Like, it does exist. It is the system we're in. And we do, those are the rules that we have to play by right now. Like, for us, if we want XYZ protection, unfortunately, the government says we have to do this paperwork. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, even like, to like how you do your taxes and who you put for your emergency contact. And if you ever want to have kids or even adopt another pet. I know I had to go through more paperwork to adopt our cat than I would if I wanted to buy an AR-15 right now, or whatever. Well, it's a whole nother. I'm going to hear from people on this. I know already. Why get political? We get that question a lot. We don't live in a bubble.
Yeah. No, we don't. And like in our case, it's intrinsically tied. Yeah. Unfortunately, us existing is political.
Exactly.
And us moving through the world, us moving through the bridal industrial complex is political. Mm-hmm. It does everything. And that kind of leads into like the vendor conversation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That it wasn't just a matter of finding vendors who were fine with us being gay.
Right.
It was finding vendors who were enthused that we were gay, who were like, yes, absolutely. Like, we love to, you know what I mean?
Just that went beyond like money is money.
Exactly.
With anyone, into like, I want to position myself as an ally, or this is important to me. It's important personally. It's important to my business. So if we're talking about like wedding planning, I guess from here on in the conversation, it's going to be largely your process for planning the wedding that didn't happen.
Right. Yes.
Okay. So from the blog Queerly Weds and from our first conversation, we talked about like why words matter. And I'm talking about like marketing and how a business puts themselves out there. Photos, representation, pronouns, not having the word bridal splashed on everything, and how you two both felt a lack of seeing yourselves, like seeing what would be possible. And I'm saying that because that's the notes I took talking to you, Kirsten, initially. So did either one of you in the whole process refer to yourselves as bride or feel like I am bride? I take that.
Yeah.
Like, I will speak to that. I think that I took on Bride, honestly, out of like obligation. Sometimes I feel like as a queer couple that kind of blends in between feminine and masculine presentation, I was the more femme presenting person, and it seemed to be an anchor with which vendors could tether to, that they could like kind of understand like, who am I talking to here? Right. So I did take on Bride. I don't think I ever felt like bridal or like the bride. It was just like more of a means, it was more like a communication thing. Mm-hmm. But also Kirsten is not a groom.
Right.
So then we were like, I guess two brides, like,
right.
I'm hearing marriers more. Yeah, which I kind of love, because I'm like, oh, well, it's two people in most cases getting married, so let's call them that. Yeah. And then I, on my official paperwork or whatever, use partner A and partner B, or partner one and partner two. And more companies and small businesses are doing that. By, it's a slow process. It shouldn't be that slow. It's like you go in and just change the words. It's not that hard, but it's also just the tip of the eye. I mean, it's like an easy thing to do and then be like, I'm doing it, you guys. I'm fine. I'm on board. But it's like, you're doing the very bare minimum.
Yeah.
How did you navigate or feel, let's say in the most like basic example of like you trying to find a DJ, and on their website, without even talking to anyone, they have an inquiry form and you can sub any vendor if that's how you, and that inquiry form is a fill-in and it just says bride's name, groom's name, date. Like, did that happen? And if it did, like, were you, did that matter? Did you note, were you like, this sucks, or that vendor is a no-go? Like, what was the psychology around that?
That definitely happened. I think there was only maybe two vendors that we actually reached out to that their intake form was set up that way. And I mean, to speak to how that felt, it required a lot of emotional labor for us to kind of just omit those words and replace them in our heads with the terms that we preferred to refer to ourselves as, or the terms that we preferred to see there.
Did it also make you make a judgment about that vendor?
For me, at least, I tried not to judge too hard the vendor themselves, just on their intake form. If I, you know, if I looked through the rest of their website, their social media, et cetera, and I saw a lack of representation, then of course I was like, okay, that's, I'm not even going to bother reaching out to that person. Like, that's, I can tell that that person prefers to shoot a particular looking couple, and they are not going to jive with us. They're not going to know how to work with us, to shoot photographs of us, to shoot video of us, or
they're going to make us feel awkward, ask weird questions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ask us things that make us feel uncomfortable, or they're going to not know how to do our hair or makeup, or, you know, things like that. And so, yeah, I mean, it took just immense amounts of emotional labor to look through all resources, every single resource that we looked at, and just kind of ignore the fact that everything was like bride, 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 bride. You know, you have to ask your groom for money, blah, blah, blah. I was like, I hate this. Every time I read something about like the bride, you know, doing all of the planning.
Yeah, and then be like, give the groom music. Yeah.
Right. Like
you can select the bar.
Yeah. At the bottom, it would be like, hot tip, ask your groom to take care of whatever. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, even from a heteronormative aspect, that's offensive when it's like, you do all the work in this labor, you know, division of labor. And the man is going to show up and he'll have picked that it's going to be a top shelf bar or whatever. It's antiquated.
And that, I mean, that might be the case for some couples, which is like fine and dandy, but I don't think that now in 2021 that even the average straight couple falls into those roles of the bride is doing every single little thing and the groom just shows up and has his like ugly Avengers groom cake. Like, I don't think that those, that's like what every average couple is doing.
You're right. But from photos and from certain like giant blogs, yes, it almost makes it look like that is exactly what's happening.
It really narrows. I feel like the bridal industrial complex is actually doing themselves, they're doing their industry a disservice because they're really narrowing the scope of what is possible for a wedding. And I think that people get afraid of like creativity and doing things outside of the box because they don't want it to be tacky.
Right.
Because that's not good for anybody. Mm-hmm. But it's like, there are so many creative ways to do this incredible thing that can fall comfortably outside of any box that's been previously done. But because it can be so overwhelming, people look for that box for a sense of guidance.
Right. You're right. It is a disservice from the industry for ourselves because we would be the creative team that would be able to like dig in and make something really cool and unique. Yeah. And it's not just the idea of what weddings are supposed to look like. It's also the idea of what the couple is supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm. Hi, if you're listening to this podcast, you might be planning a wedding or thinking about planning one or replanning one, or maybe you want to be a wedding planner.
We have been producing this podcast for over 4 years. Woo. And now we've taken all of that feedback, all of the interactions we've had through the podcast, and the expertise we have as professional wedding planners, and we've created the Big Wedding Planning Masterclass.
This is a digital course that shows you how to plan step by step from beginning to end our way. It's also helpful at any stage of the planning process, even if you've already gotten started or you're at the very tail end of wedding planning.
We know not everyone can afford a wedding planner, and we saw a need for a comprehensive, customizable, completely inclusive wedding planning instructional course.
With our course, you get templates, spreadsheets, worksheets, timelines, checklists, and pro tips. Plus, we included tons of videos and screen shares to show you exactly how to use all of our planning tools.
And we're here for you. If you have any questions, please email us at hello@thebigweddingplanningpodcast.com. And if you're interested in the course, go to thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com for more information and to sign up.
Again, www.thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com. Thank you.
I think what ends up happening, honestly, is like, anyone in any industry, if you're doing that thing for long enough, like you just want to be able to like kind of come up with a template situation that you can then fit your clients into and boom, done. You've got a wedding planned. Like I used to work, I'm still kind of dabble in, but I trained professionally as a graphic designer. And when it comes to like designing people's logos, branding, etc. I have a particular style, and that particular style is almost like my template. And so when I'm designing,
why somebody would hire you?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So when I'm designing something for a client that is looking for something that is nothing like my style, nothing like my template, it throws me for a loop. Mm-hmm. And so anyone in the wedding industry who is contacted by a queer couple that wants something that's like super out of their style or super out of their template, they're going to be like, whoa, wait, I don't know. This is what we do. This is the what you're supposed to look like. This is what you're supposed to have. These are all the elements that you're supposed to have for your wedding day. And so I think that like people just kind of fall into that and they like don't expect to be challenged to do something. Yeah.
They might be like, I'm happy to help you, but I really don't know how to do what you're asking me to do.
Right.
Which like there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But I think something that really kind of stuck out to me when we were searching for vendors like photographers and like videographers, particularly where visuals are really heavily concerned, is like, do they even like if their whole feed was tall, thin, beautiful white people, that was a red flag to me, because they aren't showing any diversity, diversity in their own craft, not even just like diversity in the people that they're shooting.
The clients.
Right. Yes. But it was an issue to me, because I'm like, do you know how to successfully photograph fat people? Do you successfully know how to photograph darker skin tones? Do you successfully know how to pose a couple that isn't definitely masculine and definitely feminine? Do you know how to do that? And especially coming from my background before the talent side of things, I went to film school, and like my whole background was in production and in cinematography and all that stuff. So it was important to me to see actual craftsmanship, like not just beautiful presets slapped over a white couple. Like I really needed to know that my body, how I looked, was going to be taken care of by you as the vendor. Right. Yeah. I needed to see that. So what I chose to do in that instance was seek out specifically queer vendors, not just people who shot queer people or whatever, who were familiar with queer weddings. I wanted queer vendors, because there's a set of language you don't have to explain. There are sets of circumstances that they're not going to be surprised by. Like, I did not want to show up to my wedding day and have my videographer be like, okay, and where's mom and dad? Mom and dad are not fucking here because they don't like the gays. Like, I don't want to have to explain that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So like, it kind of can cut to the chase by working with somebody that could identify with some of the same things that you would be bringing to the table.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So that was, could be a prerequisite or a filter by which you started to look for specific vendors.
Definitely. And I definitely also wanted to look for, it was important to me to look through, like, for example, on Instagram, looking at a photographer's page to see whether or not they were pandering to queer people or actually showcasing queer people. Because there was instances where I had been following a photographer, really liked their style, never saw a gay couple for the most part, finally did. But when I clicked into it, it was two straight women that they had styled to be a gay couple. And it's like, no, there are gay people getting married all the time. Go find one, offer your services.
Exactly. Please.
Like just do, I needed gumption. I needed, that you weren't just waiting for a queer couple to happen upon you to give you the chance to shoot their wedding. Say like, hey, I saw you were engaged. Like, I'd really love to be considered as your photographer. Mm-hmm. There are a million things that you could do to widen your repertoire to include more kinds of people.
Right.
Because otherwise you're just going to get the same niche.
Yeah. And if you're making money that way, then for a lot of vendors, it might just be like, why put myself out? Yeah. Like, why go out of my comfort zone? Mm-hmm. And then that's a bigger question, because it's about humans and how
you
get married. You said that, and I think this might have been in one of your blog posts, Kirsten, but about exactly what you're talking about, Margie, with a sharpened eye to review people's grids and sites. Mm-hmm. So beyond like digging a little bit and being like straight white, oh, look, they have a multiracial one, you know, and then clicking on that and being like, it wasn't even their wedding. It was an associate shooter or something.
Right.
Like, what else did you find yourself prior to reaching out to a vendor? Like, what did you look for that was either like a green flag or a red flag on websites and grids? Like, what were some of the things that you could look for that could be kind of like hints for people to look for on websites, content, photos, grids?
Yeah. I mean, language was a really big thing for me. I mean, Margie and I are very empathetic people, so we like really can pick up on someone's vibe just based on like their writing style and the content that they put out into the world. So I feel like we have a little bit of an upper hand in that department. But language is a huge thing. I mean, we talked about that earlier, and like just the words being used, the descriptors, the explanations of, you know, how you work, how you shoot a couple, how you interact with your couples, things like that. Those were really major things that I looked for on different vendors' websites.
A like specific thing that I would look for in terms of language as an example, would be, first of all, like the liberal or not liberal use of pronouns, like how heavily gendered is your content in, and like, do you have sort of open-ended, like from your website, from, you know, let's say like your mission statement or whatever, do you have an open-ended, I guess, like, do you as a vendor have an open-ended idea of what a wedding is supposed to be, what it's supposed to look mm-hmm. like or not? Because there's some vendors that like we ended up not going with because they seem to have a very narrow idea of how a wedding day was going to go. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really, it felt like we couldn't collaborate with them.
Right.
It felt like we couldn't develop a vision mm-hmm. with them, that they weren't going to be co-conspirators in this like wonderful event that we were trying to put on, because we were trying to go relatively, I mean, we weren't going doing anything crazy outside of like what a typical wedding would look like, but we wanted the options to be able to come up with something new. And we wanted to know that our vendors were going to be willing to work with us and weren't going to be shocked if during the process, one of us happened to be working on gender stuff and switch pronouns. Were they going to be ready for that? Were they going to be like, mm-hmm. Open to that and be able mm-hmm. to sort of like shift, you know, like
being corrected, you know, that you just can't assume that they're going to know, but you would feel like, hey, just so you know, if you could refer to me as she, her, what, you know, whatever, or mm-hmm. stop asking who's the groom, ha ha ha. Like,
yeah,
you could correct them and then be like, oh my gosh, yes, of course I will stop doing that.
Well,
or be like, oh, sorry.
Right. And especially having everything not specifically geared towards like just I feel like there were so many vendors that we talked to that assumed that the only person looking at this website was the bride or mm-hmm. was the mother of the bride. Mm-hmm. Like there was, you know what I mean? I appreciated it when I saw things like the couple,
right?
The mm-hmm. newlyweds, the nearlyweds, like mm-hmm. providing the opportunity for you to insert yourself as your own unit and not just like, hey girls, let's plan your wedding.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that was like, really, to see those kinds of things like was really empowering, honestly, because there were so many parts of wedding planning where I felt like I had where I was like just completely out of my element and didn't feel good about it. But then Kirsten was able to step in and be like, yes, this is totally up my alley. I want to take care of this. And we were able to confidently and comfortably do that because it wasn't designated to the bride or it wasn't designated to the groom. It was like, you as a couple decide what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. that was really helpful. Like
even in like email language from a vendor, you could like that, you would feel like that is great that they phrased it that way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we, something that we did that I actually really recommend is we made an email specifically for all wedding planning stuff. And both of us were in the signature, Margie and Kirsten, Kirsten and Margie, always.
We recommend that.
So that they
too.
Always knew. So it wasn't just a like, you know, make sure you talk to your wife or make sure you talk to whoever, like to mm-hmm. make sure that it's fine. Or it was to both of us. We wanted everybody to know that like, it was kind of a first exercise as a married couple in terms of like the united front thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like we weren't doing like, this is what Margie wants. This is what Kirsten wants. Come up with something in the middle. It was like, we were doing it together.
Yeah. It's project management, collaborative yeah. together. We're all on base camp or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I have, and this might be an unpopular opinion, but I want your take on it. I have a couple like red flags for myself, even when we're looking at like who to have on the pod, you know, guests, and we try to vet, of course, we don't want anybody a year later for us to find out we interviewed someone and gave them a platform. And then, you know, so we always ask, do you do XYZ kinds of weddings? Because we won't have you on if you don't. But just for my own personal, like sleuthing around, and social media is such a huge part of the wedding industry. And I know you were doing this too and trying to hire or find the right people to work with or the right people to be inspired by, I mm-hmm. guess.
Yeah.
You have very limited space in the profile of your Instagram grid, right? Like you right. have to use it wisely and put in like where you stand or at least a mission statement that can tell people who you are in whatever three sentences. So I generally find that if Jesus is mentioned in their business profile first, usually like love follower of Jesus, mm-hmm. photographer, mom, that it's almost a veiled way of saying, I don't do gay weddings. And I know yeah. that's horrible. And even for me to like say that out loud, I'm like, I'm going to hear from some people. I don't think it's a Venn diagram where like, if you love Jesus, you don't agree with gay weddings. I don't think that. I know plenty of people who, you know, are Jesus, all about Jesus, but are also very socially progressive and all the things. Mm-hmm. I know it exists. But as an indicator and to put it in your profile, I can almost like guess then with certainty, the grid is not going to show that you feel like I'm right, right?
Yes.
I mean, yes, that would definitely be our experience. Particularly because like religion is probably in our case is the primary barrier to like having my family be involved.
Yeah. And it's people feeling outside of something rather than included in something yes. largely, which like, is
I already know that I exist as a person who experiences certain marginalizations. I don't need my vendors to remind me. Like I really don't need that. And yeah, that would definitely be a red flag for me too, because I already know that our value systems are different.
Yeah. Right. And you don't have to be the one to like show them the way, you know, that's exhausting. Like you said, there's an emotional exhaustion in seeing things or having to like ignore things. Like, sure, their intake form sucked, but let's talk to them and see if that, you know, is just an oversight and they're actually really, and then if it's like two strikes, okay, well now it wasn't just their intake form. It's also their surprise to find out. I mean, I had a baker once ask me, cause I said my two brides and she was like, oh, it's two couples getting married on the same day. And I was like, I can't believe your mind went to double wedding before it yeah. went to two women marrying each other who both identify as brides. It was just like, it could have been like her next guess might've been polygamy. I really feel like if I had been like, nope, not two couples.
Yeah.
One dude and two ladies. Yeah, yeah. It was crazy. So the other yeah. red flag, or like maybe this is my own sensitivity to this being in business, but is whenever I see terms like boss babe or yeah. you know, boss babe is the big boss bitch, yeah. boss babe in somebody's yeah. profile, it makes me feel like, oh, we're not gonna
Yeah.
We're not
yeah,
going to align.
We're not going to mesh. We're not going to mesh at all. And I can't really blame people who have that. Like, that's actually been a really big conversation, especially during the quarantine, is like moving away from like hustle culture. Like, I don't want to be part of your hustle. Do you know what I mean? I want to be a part of your craft.
Yeah. It takes yeah. away from like you as a business person to put the word babe in there. And it over feminizes, I think, like work that you're doing. I don't know. It's just, maybe it's like my own little pet peeve.
I think it's a bigger conversation about like how women need to,
how
women need to move through capitalism under patriarchy. I think that's it's like a much bigger conversation for
it's
why.
Like probably a different podcast.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But I'll yes, pitch us. It's a red flag.
The other one is more, it's something that we saw a lot a couple years ago. And I thought, much like gladiator sandals, would just go away, and it didn't. It's still around to where I'm like, I should have just bought fucking gladiator sandals 7 years ago, because they're still a thing. And that is the video, the haha funny, hilarious video of a first look, when the surprise funny part is that it's actually a groomsman in a wedding dress.
Yes.
From the minute I first saw the first one of those, I was like, I don't like that. And then it became like so many people were reposting stuff. And I was like, why don't I like this? Oh, I think it's because the big joke is man with chest hair in sweetheart neckline. It seemed like low hanging fruit to me and kind of cheap. But the more I've seen it, the more I'm like, no, I don't like it because of what it's saying about gender in general and what real relationships are. So And that's like my I'm like confessing this almost to you both, that because I haven't said it on the pod at all or in any of our, we're not going to post any of that, you know, bonkers stuff ourselves, but like, I don't like it. And
yeah. Cause it does pre-assume that there is something inherently wrong with bodies and gender presentation and what bodies are allowed to present what genders. And that's like a huge issue. And I mean, like, I feel like there is positive movement on that front. I feel like there are more options than ever for people to wear things other than a dress and a suit. Like, I feel like there are so many more things. And while it's still ends up being, it seems like we're still in that phase of that progression where it's chic for skinny, beautiful white people to do it, and like less so for other kinds of bodies. We are still like moving towards that. So I do feel like there's a certain sense of relief. Like, there's more beautiful jumpsuits for people to wear. There's more beautiful like capes and things. So you can still have this incredible train without needing to wear a veil, because the veil is also can be like very archaic and represent things that maybe don't align with your values or how you want to present in the world. Like, there's more options for people like Kirsten that are more masculine of center that maybe aren't necessarily an ill-fitting suit, which is a huge problem and why Kirsten had to shell out for a custom one so that she did feel really, really good on our wedding day. Like, there is movement there because there is a need there.
Yeah.
And people are finally starting to pick up on it.
Yeah. I totally agree that actually has come farther attire wise and options has come farther than some of the other elements of inclusivity in the wedding industry. It's already been an hour, but I want to touch on and in trying to think of like somebody listening to this could take away some advice or be inspired by, and I know you didn't end up having the wedding with the guest list that you maybe thought you were going to, but a big part of your blog, Kirsten, was the who do you invite and who can you not invite and how do you break that down? And I would love to hear your thoughts on that and maybe, like I said, some takeaway or advice grabbing and being empowered by who you have there to celebrate your love and that you made a choice and didn't feel like, okay, we'll invite him because if we don't, we're going to never hear the end of it or...
Right.
I mean, even Margie, to hear that your family, your parents are like, what are they? Not. Still think it's a phase?
I mean,
they're just in complete denial, basically. Okay.
Well, how did you guys navigate that part?
I mean, that I think was the toughest part for us, was trying to come up with our guest list and figure out, you know, basically come to terms with like having to make really tough decisions about who is supposed to be there and who needed to not be on our guest list out of obligation.
And I do think that is a big thing that separates queer people from straight people, is that queer people need to figure out who is safe to be there.
Exactly.
Who is safe to be there? Because there are people that I certainly felt obligated to extend an invitation to as like a motion of goodwill, essentially, as like a good faith gesture, and then realize that if they came, I would be walking on eggshells at my own wedding.
Right.
And that's not safe. That's not, that doesn't cultivate an environment that is supportive of a couple saying vows and doing this kind of like, big step together. So that was
You're opening up, you're sharing love. It's vulnerable and wonderful and beautiful, but how would you feel safe doing that, feeling like there's somebody here that actually literally doesn't agree? That's crazy. Right.
Exactly.
Right. And won't keep it to themselves. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, exactly. Yeah.
So that was absolutely obviously a massive factor into who was being invited into our ceremony. Something that I think we naively did that we didn't need to do is, aside from our ceremony, we both come from big, big fat Cuban, like Cuban weddings and like Cuban families, excuse me, Cuban families, and having a ton of people at any given event is a given. And I think that there was a part of us that felt like we were going to be missing out on that, on having like a big event where everybody's there and everybody gets to be involved. So what we did was, aside from our ceremony, we had planned the week after to host a cocktail party for our extended families in Miami. And genuinely, we really did not need to do. Obviously, it didn't happen anyway, but we didn't need to extend it to them at all, because none of those people made a difference or contributed to the cultivation of our relationship.
Right. They weren't your village.
No. Right. Exactly. No, they weren't. Yeah. And we really didn't need to go out of our way to yet again do this goodwill gesture and be like, we are normal, we promise. Like, we are good people, we promise.
We're just like you.
We're worthy also. We're inviting you here so that we can kind of like argue our case of worthiness.
Be an example. Right. We didn't need to freaking do that. Right. So we did have to kind of like whittle down like who can come. And we decided that like plus ones were not going to be a thing unless we knew your plus one. Unless we had a relationship with your plus one. Otherwise, I'm sorry, there's kind of no need. We are all like, our group of friends is small enough that we all know each other. And there's like no need to have to like, to bring somebody that we don't know just so you don't feel alone that night. Mm-hmm, because you're not going to feel alone that night. We're designing this specifically so nobody feels alone that
night. Right.
And it was, we had to do a lot of like hemming and hawing and like a lot of therapy, honestly, about who gets to be in our space when we're doing this big thing.
Well, who do you want to witness the spell you're casting? You know, like, who do you want to witness this incredibly intimate ritual?
And to be able to add their energy.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so that's, I know that for, you know, a lot of couples, it's, you know, maybe your parent is, your parent or parents are funding, are bankrolling your wedding. And so you feel like, you know, your parent is giving you this list of people that you have to invite because they say so. I know that that's like a lot of people's, situation, but, that wasn't ours. And so we were able to be very strict with who we invited. Who we extended that.
I think it can umbrella both of those things. I think if you're in that situation where your parents are bankrolling the event and you do feel pressure to allow them to have a certain say, I think that that's where putting on your adult pants and sitting down eye to eye with your parent as another adult and having a conversation about that energy exchange, about that sacredness, that it's not a debutante. You're not, you know what I mean? Right. You're not showing off. You're making a statement as a couple and you are creating a hallmark date that solidifies your family moving forward. I totally understand where some people are going to have the more the merrier thing, but if that's not you as a person, if that's not you as a couple, then it deserves to be said out loud and it deserves to be acknowledged.
Yeah. It's worth standing up for yourself on that one is the distilled advice there, because you're right. It's also not about your parents, even though for many weddings, it's not about them completely, but it's not about them. And the money situation can sometimes be a little bit manipulative. You know, we're paying for it and we want our neighbors to come. So either they're going to come or, you know, you can serve everybody hot dogs or whatever, you know, whatever. And it becomes like, it's drama all the way around and a bunch of stuff gets like dredged up where you're like, oh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. You know? So that can be, I think that can even feel universal, you know, across the wedding spectrum, but you're right that it is worth having a respectful, but firm conversation and at least getting your argument out there, because also it would be good for you as a person getting married to be like, I'm starting this thing with another human. It is a natural breakaway from parents for a lot of people. So to stand up for yourself at the beginning is a good exercise, even if you don't get the results that you want.
Yeah, definitely.
So do you think you will end up having a big cocktail party in some capacity?
Here's the thing. I would love to, because we don't really celebrate ourselves that much. I'm definitely an indoor cat person. I'm super introvert. Like, so big parties like that are not really my jam, but I think as a, like, it is such a special occasion. It's something that's hard won. We fought hard for our relationship. We fought hard to build a family. We fought hard to provide this event for ourselves. Like, we paid for it. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? We weren't making a living wage and we still paid. Like, we figured out how to do it our own way. And I do want everyone to fucking see it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I do have that part of me where I'm like, yes, like, yeah, everyone come to my party today. Yeah. Like, I do want that.
So it's a maybe. You could still.
Maybe we could, especially because I think it's a victory and I think it's a victory, mm-hmm, we're celebrating. But I think that we are going to prioritize having the ceremony and dinner that we really want with the people that mean the most to us and still feeling free to rage in the safety of our village. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So should I give you my home address or are you going to, you can, yeah, just send me an invite.
I'll email you the invite. Like,
we'll send you the deets.
Yes. I feel like I'm there now. It's been an hour and a half face to face. So
yes.
I would totally be there with bells on. I got the invitation. You're both so lovely. I want you to drop where people can find. There's so much more like personal anecdotes and advice on the website and the blog that you created. And still, you know, you're still in it sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Even though wedding planning part of your life is over, at least for now. Yeah. So drop all that. And thank you again, both of you, for
joining me. Yeah, of course. So you can find QueerlyWeds at QueerlyWeds on Instagram, QueerlyWeds, and QueerlyWeds.com. And it's just so many personal stories. And that's how I'd like to give advice is, you know, literally recounting everything that we went through and giving advice from that perspective. That I think it really counters the a lot of the big wedding blogs that give you the advice from like this on high, like godly position. Like, it's just, I find it weird.
Right. Or heavily branded position.
Yes.
Yours is very personal. It's also like, hey, if I had known then what I know now, I would have done this differently. And I love a list. There's a lot of like top 10, top five, like
love a list.
I get those pitches from people. And if I look through it and I'm like, okay, she gave us a list. She can be on the podcast. Cause now I know exactly what we can talk about. And I'm a bullet point girl. Yeah. I'm a bullet boss bitch.
Yes.
Boss babe. Hashtag the way. So, okay. Well, the website, the links, everything will be in our show notes on our website, and you'll see, I think, a wedding picture is probably what I'll end up making the graphic, our promo graphic. So that's on our grid. That's what Kirsten and Margie look like, or at least what they looked like on their wedding on day. What ended up being the wedding day. Yes. And hopefully we'll see more photos of y'all if you do another big celebration or anything, really. I think you're both lovely. Thank you for spending some time with me.
Of course. Thank you.
So happy to be here.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Christy Matthews, and Michelle Martinez. It is edited by Veronica Gruba. Music by Steph Altman of Mophonics. If you like the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, please subscribe. We are available for free on pretty much all podcast player apps. Help us get the word out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at The Big Wedding Planning Podcast and be sure to use the hashtag #PlanThatWedding when posting. Become part of our Facebook group. Join us and our amazing members. Just search The Big Wedding Planning Podcast Community on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 415-723-1625 and you might hear your voice on a future episode. That is it. Happy planning, everybody. Christy, love you, love your show.
Bye.